get going with the webinar. I think that there may be other people that are joining us momentarily, but again, for all the new arrivals, my name is Jessica Schifano at the Lowell Center for Sustainable Production, and today we're going to be hearing from Christine Chase at Green Seal. This is the inaugural GC3 webinar, and we're happy that all of you could make it. This was an idea that emerged out of our spring roundtable discussion to provide the kind of content we provide at our roundtable all year long. So we are happy that we can do this, and we welcome suggestions for presentations and presenters. So in the future, if there's any particular interesting areas that you want to discuss in a forum like this, please let me know. Just a quick overview about the functionality of this webinar program. You can see all the participants on the left side of the field and of the website, and on the right side there is a chat option. At any time, if there are questions and you want to pose to the presenter, you can feel free to do so in the chat, and I will make sure we raise those at the end of Christine's presentation. So I will, without any further ado, move on to the topic for today. Eco-labeling, it may be a tool to encourage and reward genuine efforts towards sustainable innovation, as well as a tool for businesses to distinguish their safer products in the marketplace. Many eco-labeling programs and schemes have been developed to promote green chemistry and distinguish these safer products. However, some of these eco-labeling activities have generated concerns about greenwashing. These programs have addressed concerns in different ways. For example, as many of you know of and are involved in, EPA's Design for the Environment program has undertaken a number of activities to increase transparency. Also underway, which many of you may be active in, is the ACS Green Chemistry Institute standard development process on green chemicals and process technologies. Today we're going to hear from Christine Chase about how existing third-party eco-labeling programs like Green Seal, and specifically Green Seal, promote and encourage green chemistry and protect against greenwashing. So, Christine, I turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jessica. I appreciate it. Thanks again for the sort of opportunity to talk to those members of the GC3 and to everyone who's joining us. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay,
yes.
Great. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about, a little bit about the Green Seal program, and then talk a little bit about how it sort of, how it fits in with green chemistry, and how it can affect and help protect against greenwashing and better, more sustainable products out there in the marketplace that Jessica outlined. So with that, we'll just go ahead and get started. Title here is Green Chemistry and Green Seal. I'll just begin by just sort of giving you an idea of Green Seal sort of as a mission-based organization. So our mission is, we're an independent nonprofit organization, and we use science-based standards and the power of the marketplace to create a more sustainable world. So a lot of what we do is sort of governed by this mission statement that we have, and looking for opportunities for promoting sustainable products and services in the marketplace. So just a little background about who we are. We are the leading U.S. Type 1 program. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, which is kind of exciting. Definitely, I'd say in the world of green, we've sort of been one of the ones who've been doing this for 20 years, so that's been really great. We also don't have any financial interest, and a lot of this has to do with our 501c3 standing. But we don't have any financial interest in the products and services that we certify. I just want to talk about sort of four elements here about the Green Seal program. One of the things that we do is we set environmental leadership standards. I'll go into a little more detail about this in a little while. And then from those standards, what we do is we then provide certification. So we certify products and services that meet the requirements of the standard. From sort of based off of that, we then assist with the greening of governments and institutions. So, looking at sort of the environmental leadership standards that are out there and what can be assisted with the greening of government institutions, helping guide those that are looking to make real change. And then also, what we do is education of purchasers. Purchasers are looking at defining or, you know, want green specifications or greener products. What does that define? How do you define that? What are the different elements? What are the specific criteria that you look at? Those sort of things. We provide some purchaser education based off our previous history of certification as well as standard development. So looking at sort of a type 1 label, type 1 labels, what they do is they incorporate environmental health considerations at the life cycle of the product. So we're not looking at one attribute, we're looking at sort of the whole process. So we're looking at the whole life cycle, including raw materials, manufacturing, packaging, performance, one of them, use and maintenance, obviously, of the product, and then finally the disposal or recycling, reuse, what happens at the end of the life of the product. So what we do is try to incorporate all the different aspects from the beginning of the product all the way until the end to see what are the different elements of the environmental and health impacts and where the sort of the criteria be set in order to minimize those impacts possible. Some of the things that we incorporate into each of our standards as well as looking at some of the existing standards, laws, regulations, what are the regulations surrounding disposal of products, for instance, hazardous waste disposal, that sort of thing. We're also looking at energy and material usage, how much energy and material are being used and how can we sort of minimize that throughout the life cycle of the product. Looking at the, sort of the air, water, land emissions and waste, also those are elements that we consider looking at those, you know, maybe different for every raw material, maybe sort of have some impacts, whereas it may be a different consideration in the raw material in the packaging or end-of-life disposal. And then we also look at sort of the ecological and human health impacts, and we look at that, you know, not only from those people who are working on it or who are perhaps extracting raw materials, as well as those who are using it, diluting it and using it and being exposed to certain chemicals. It's also something that goes into consideration, so we're looking at the entire life cycle of the product here. So just to sort of, these are sort of general principles of Green Cell Leadership Standards. One of the things that we do, we try to make sure that all the standards that we develop, are meeting these sort of, these principles as best of our ability. First thing that we have is being objective. We want to make sure that we aren't sort of swayed one way or the other. There's really usually a lot of stakeholders involved in our standard development process, but we want to maintain our objectivity so that we can create a good standard. We also want to make sure it's science-based. We want to make sure that it's not, based on something that is emotional-based or something that, people will have a certain concern, but there is sort of science behind it, and there's a reason for setting the criteria certain ways based on literature, documentation, past research, that sort of thing, that it is based on hard science. We want to make sure that we are also transparent, and this is transparent not only in sort of the standards that we have available, but as well as our standard development process. We want to make sure that all the different elements of the standard development process are transparent, and we are providing information for what we can about how we go about developing standards. Also, about our leadership standards, we also look at, like I mentioned, the life cycle of the environmental and health considerations. So this is considered multi-attribute. So it's not just looking at one aspect or one attribute of the product or service. We're looking at several different elements and how they all fit together. One of the things that we also include in our leadership standards are functional performance. And the reason for this is because we want to make sure that products are being performing the way they should. We want to ensure that, for a green product, if it's not working properly, if you use more of it or you sort of dispose of it, it's not really doing what it needs to be doing, and it's, in a sense, being a less green product because then you end up with waste that you didn't have before. We also want to make sure that all of our standards are compliant with regulations and legislation. We keep an eye on what's out there, what's going on, what is sort of up and coming, and making sure that our standards are at least within those regulations and legislation that's existing. Also, one thing that we do is also a peer review. So this is looking at sort of the stakeholder process, and I'll get into a little more detail about this. But what we do is we open our leadership standards out to the stakeholders so that they can get involved, so people can take a look at the different criteria, what we're thinking, what we're looking at. We also do a response to comments. So all the comments that we receive, we also respond to as well, trying to have people understand exactly the different criteria, the different elements that we're looking at, and the considerations and how we arrived at those. The specific criteria. And also we want to make sure that this, we want to make sure that the standards that we develop are leadership standards. So we're looking at sort of the top percent of the marketplace. You don't want to develop a standard that everyone can meet because then it's not really moving the marketplace. But you also want to make it attainable. You want to make it so that something, there are people out there, there are manufacturers sort of leading the way that can attain these standards. A standard that is developed that is the best standard that nobody can meet or nobody can use is not really a standard that is good and functional and being used properly. And then finally, one of the things we sort of consider is economically feasible. A few things that we do require in terms of our standards are sort of testing or different elements in order to test for the safety. We want to make sure that that's not pricing anyone out or making that no one can do the testing because it's cost prohibitive for whatever reason. So this is sort of just the elements of our standard development process. And I'll sort of run through these quickly here. We sort of begin with a feasibility assessment. A lot of this has to do with what's already existing. Would a life cycle-based standard make sense? Would it make a difference within this product category? If there's already a standard out there, we don't necessarily feel like we need to develop another standard. And then, what we do is sort of just assess whether or not that would make sense. Then we do a project proposal, so we sort of announce the project and get stakeholders involved, usually do some reaching out to experts and having people get introduced to the project. We then do a project initiation and notification, so this is also known as a PIN, so this is sort of a formal notification about the project and what we're getting ready to undertake. We also do like a little bit of scoping, so each of our product categories are specific to, let's say, like cleaning products, but within that, what fits within that category, what doesn't fit within that category, what should we consider, what should we not consider. Those are some of the questions that we try to answer in the scoping period. And then from that, we go into sort of a drafting period, so looking at collecting all the information based off the feasibility and the preliminary background research. What does that all mean? How do you put it all together? And that sort of goes through in the drafting phase. From that, then we usually have a proposed standard. So then we have a proposed standard with specific criteria to say here are some of the elements that we believe are important within the life cycle that should be considered. Here's some sort of thoughts on where those criteria, what the specific criteria should say. Usually what we do is the proposed standard is open for a comment, and we usually receive all those comments from those periods and take a look and assess, how that changes the standard. And then it sort of goes into a final review and approval process. And then finally, we're looking at the final and part of that standard development process, we then issue the standard. Once the standard is issued, then what we can do is we can provide certification and get the standard. So just sort of a few of the elements about the Green Seal Certification Program. I know there's a lot of words here, so I'll try to break it down. One of the things is that, we're looking at, once we have standards established, then we can then certify against that standard. And their certification, we're looking at rigorous science-based evaluation, so evaluating against products or services, that are applying for certification against the standard. We also do on-site inspections of manufacturing facilities and service locations. We think that's sort of really important in order to verify the information that you're receiving. We also want to evaluate our products without bias or without a conflict of interest. So we want to make sure that what we're looking at and how we look at it, that we aren't swayed one way or the other by certain things. And that sort of feeds into it is that our evaluation fees are fixed, or they're sort of a flat fee. So it's not like we're tied to, we don't necessarily get a royalty for every product that are sold after that. So that sort of is important in looking at, how we evaluate things and what sort of the motivation is. You sort of want to make sure that there isn't a conflict of interest. Ours also for the Green Seal Certification, and it involves a review of materials. What we do is we review literature, labels, catalogs, websites, anything that's sort of going to carry the Green Seal or will be in terms of a Green Seal certified product. But what we want to do is make sure that they are adhering to the Federal Trade Commission Environmental Marketing Guidelines. We also look for, in terms of Green Seal as well, we look to protect against greenwashing. So one of the things that we're trying to do is make sure that there aren't additional claims that are being used. There's a lot of claims that are out there, and a lot of claims I think that companies want to make. But anything that's going to carry the Green Seal certification, because the Green Seal is a registered trademark, we want to make sure that all those claims, any environmental claims, are substantiated. So substantiated either by the standard itself through certification or through other documentation. And a lot of things that we do is we do ask for all those questions, and we do review all of them to make sure that all the claims that are being made for a Green Seal certified product are substantiated. And so that's for a lot of ways, when you're seeing something that's Green Seal certified, then you'll know that all the claims that are there, they have evidence that there's substantiation, there's reason behind it, and it isn't just sort of like an empty claim. In addition, certified products and services have to participate in ongoing compliance monitoring. We find this an important part of our program as well. I want to make sure that the products and services don't just meet the standard once and are done. They sort of have to continue to meet it. For some of our standards that are tiered, have to come in at bronze and then they have to move to silver. We want to encourage sort of continuous innovation and continuous improvement. I want to make sure that the products do that. We also do on-site inspections to make sure that we follow up with those as well and make sure that the facilities are running as they should. And, you know, any products or services that aren't going to pass the monitoring or the on-site inspections then lose their certification. So in order to remain certified, you have to make sure that you are continued compliance within the certification program. So just sort of, you know, breaking it down, okay, well, you know, here are these environmental standards and, you know, here's the certification against it. You know, how does that sort of help green chemistry? How does that sort of build upon and fit within the 12 principles of green chemistry? So we're looking at those, and so, you know, having a standard, having something that is a sort of life cycle based that is explicit, will have explicit, meaningful, and consistent criteria. What happens is that, you know, you then have different elements that are outlined within each of the standards, and you're able to sort of define what that means and how to go about it and what requirements are needed for different criteria, different elements, you know, be it toxicity, biodegradability, different prohibited chemicals that may be, hazardous chemicals that may be used. And it also provides a goal to work towards. Certainly in certification, there are certain forward-thinking companies that are, you know, moving ahead of the pack, but there are certain those that need sort of are looking for guidance, are looking for, you know, something to work towards. So in a lot of sense, looking at the specific criteria provides a goal to work towards. It also eliminates potentially harmful chemicals in the marketplace. Certainly one thing you don't want to get into when you're formulating is sort of uninformed substitution, so using one hazardous chemical in replace of another. So, you know, what we're looking at, we look at broad-based classes are chemicals that have been identified as hazardous, be it carcinogens or mutagens, reproductive toxins, that sort of thing. And we also consider life cycle of product, and, you know, a lot of that is important because, you know, you don't want to look at one aspect and not see the other part or the other impact of another part of, you know, making that change. So the life cycle does make a lot of, it's very important in that aspect as well. And then, you know, within certification, once you have sort of Greenfield certified or someone's identified as that, you can then sort of get differentiation or recognition in the marketplace. And for, you know, a lot of companies, that's, you know, knowing that there's a third party that came and looked at that it, you know, the product meets the standard and that there's differentiation within the marketplace from carrying a Greenfield standard, that definitely sort of helps move and shape the marketplace towards better sustainable products and services. It also provides innovation and better design, you know, looking at all the different elements of within the life cycle of a product, you know, thinking about those and considering those all together, that we, you know, believe does provide innovation, sort of a better sort of comprehensive framework in thinking about that. And we're also looking at continuous improvement. So we're looking at ongoing monitoring, you know, for the maintaining the certification, as well as the standard revision. And what happens is that, you know, all of our standards are developed for the sort of leadership of the marketplace. But if we feel like that's not, you know, it's not addressing the leadership of the marketplace, you know, something changed, new technologies, what we do is we periodically revise our standards as well and make sure that that standard is sort of, we're always sort of raising the bar in a sense and making sure that the products that are out there are sort of the ones that are the leaders are the ones that, you know, that can achieve the higher standard. And we're also sort of a few of the elements as well in the standard process that sort of fit in with green chemistry and then sort of I think really important as well is some of the things as far as performance requirements. This is sort of what I mentioned before. If a product isn't working, then it's not necessarily green. But it's an important consideration when you're looking at a green chemistry or looking at green formulating to make sure that the product itself is going to work as good or better than what you had existing. You want to make sure that that's definitely a consideration that you have. In addition, sort of packaging and labeling requirements is something that's involved in all of our standards as well. You know, packaging being an important aspect of a lot of waste that goes into it. But also labeling, because particularly for some of these chemical-based products, you want to make sure not only that you know, what you have is a greener product, but that's being used appropriately. It's being diluted. It's not being disposed of incorrectly. It's not presenting any hazards to those that are using it, because there are clear instructions for how to use it, how to dispose of it, you know, and how to dilute it properly. And so that sort of information we find very important as well. In addition, so the on-site manufacturing evaluation, we have that as well as an important aspect of it that is built into the program. And then also the open stakeholder involvement for standard development. Those that are looking at green chemistry and improvements, we obviously have a stakeholder. We call for stakeholders and ask for them, for anyone to get involved in the standard development process. And elements of green chemistry can be addressed in that manner as well during the standard development process. So this is just sort of give you an idea of some of the green steel standards that we have right now. We have a lot of different product categories that are on there. All of our green steel standards are available on our website, as well as our list of green steel certified products. You know, sort of our product categories, a lot of them are in cleaning product standards or product cleaning product category. We also have some paper products, construction materials, some paints and coatings, a lot of different sort of related standards within that. And we are sort of developing standards for the household or for the retail marketplace. There are some standards that we're developing that will address those that, you know, are looking to buy it for their homes or looking to buy it for their families. What are some of the things that they can identify? What are some of the things that they can look at when they see the green steel certification, let's say the grocery store, for example? So then sort of knowing the certification and the standard development process, I sort of wanted to give you guys an idea of, well, who governs us or who sort of oversees Eco Labels in general, and just sort of give you an understanding of what we're looking to, you know, things that we, that guide us, and that we follow. And some of the things as far as international guidance, there's the ISO 14020 and 14024, which is the environmental labels and declarations, as well as type 1 environmental labeling. And a lot of this, a lot of the principles that I've went over are things that are based off of these international guidelines, performance requirements being one of those things that, that are required in there to establish what the type 1 eco label. So those are some of the international guidance that we follow. As well, there's also a global eco labeling network. So these are all the eco labels from, you know, around the globe. If you're familiar with Blue Angel, Nordic Swan, EU Flower, any of those sort of programs or similar to the programs that, that we develop, and we're all part of a global eco labeling network. Greenfield is a U.S. member, as a member in GEN for the United States, when we sort of attend the meetings and you know, share best practices and that sort of thing. We also, they also went through recently a peer review of the program. So what this entailed is that all those members within the global eco labeling network sit down and take a look and review the process in which each of the programs went through their certification as well as standard development, and to make sure that everyone was sort of adhering to the international guidelines correctly, I guess, in a sense. So, you know, the approaches might be different, but how they went about it and whether or not the validity of the program was something that we wanted to do sort of as a peer review sort of program within the GEN, which is the Global Eco Labeling Network. As far as national guidance, so we're looking at the American National Standards Institute, so ANSI. We're the only ANSI-accredited Type 1 Eco Label in North America. And then we also sort of look at some of the other elements or any other sort of guidelines for what makes a third-party certifier, what's looking at, you know, what makes a good Eco Label. So EPA had some criteria for a third-party certifier. Consumers Union came out with some as well. And then, as I mentioned before, the FTC and environmental marketing guidelines are things that we adhere to. So we're looking at, you know, when we're an eco label and you want to be sort of a valid third party, you know, what are some of the things that you make sure to follow and make sure that that is something that is consistent within the program. So this is sort of just a map of the global eco labeling network, and some of these labels you may recognize, some of those you may not. These are all the ones in different countries. And as I mentioned, you know, we are the U.S. member, and those are some of the other eco labels that are out there. So just to give you a map. This is some listings that we had as far as, you know, looking at, you know, third party and, you know, knowing how we sort of go out and developing it. You know, there are other lists of, you know, there's definitely a lot of ones that are out there. So they're looking at what's credible third party eco labels and what, you know, how can you sort of distinguish some of those in the marketplace. So these are just a couple of lists that that we saw recently about notifying of different you know, eco labels that are out there. These are sort of related to, I think, some of these are building product related, so this would be within the building product category. But their green steel is sort of noted as a sort of valid third-party eco label to sort of to take a look at and to have consideration. In terms of our, these is probably in terms of our institutional marketplace, as I mentioned, we have a lot of different standards. Some of the ones we're developing are sort of for consumers. So there have been a lot of sort of articles and articles in the media about, you know, how do you distinguish something that's a greener product? How do you know what's out there when you're buying it? So this is just sort of a sampling of some of the media that run articles discussing, you know, an eco-label, and then sort of discussing sort of the Green Seal program and what we do and how we go about some of the things as far as certification and standard development. So that's just sort of an idea. So, you know, based on all of that, you know, one thing, that sort of an underlying question, I guess, is it working? Is it, you know, developing standard certifying products, does it make a difference? Is it sort of doing the impact that you want it to? And so what we did a study for, this is based on one of our service-based standards, so looking at the GS 33, which is our lodging service standard, you know, what are the impacts of it? This one is a bronze, silver, gold tiered standard, so we're looking at the bronze level. So what are the impacts and, you know, how does that affect greenhouse gas? And what we found when we did a study is that, you know, looking at just the bronze level, you can sort of do a significant reductions of greenhouse gas from energy, water, as well as waste. And this is looking at implementing some of the practices and some of the criteria specified in the standard, whether it's recycling, whether or not it's water efficiency, you know, the faucets, or also it's replacement of energy-efficient lights. So this is just sort of gives you an evidence that, you know, some of the things, you know, looking at the criteria and the life cycle of a product of a standard can make sort of a real difference. We use greenhouse gas just sort of as a metric to measure it this way. So, and then sort of finally, you know, just to sort of give you an idea, you know, looking at, you know, an impact, you want to make sure that your footprint, you know, be it your carbon footprint or environmental footprint, you are sort of developing products that are truly greener, that are making a less impact, that are, you know, using less hazardous chemicals, produce waste, sort of thing, and that, you know, you are sort of, you know, obviously there's going to be increments, but you want to be able to move towards the right direction. And we believe that this is certainly one way to go about it. So with that, I guess I can wrap up. So thank you very much, and I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Christine. That was wonderful. So at this time, I'm going to open it up to any questions from people on the line. So feel free to chime right in.
I give all the answers? Is that what it is?
What is the cost to get the certification?
Oh, so the cost is it's on a tiered, so it's based on the annual revenue of your company. And so it ranges from, I'd say, like the low end would probably be like $2,300 maybe. And then the high end will probably be close to $10,000. And so we have some discount programs, and there are sort of prices for if you do more than one product at the same time, that sort of thing. So that gives you an idea of what we're looking at.
Is that per product?
That would be per product, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I ask how often you go back and check? You said that you make sure somebody is staying you know, compliant, so that then they, you know, can be certified continually. How often do you check that's the case?
Well, it's sort of an ongoing process, but what we do typically is sort of right now it's sort of on an annual basis. So we'll do it, you know, every 12 months, sort of, and on the anniversary. Obviously, that, you know, may change if we feel like it needs to be every 6 months or, you know, every quarter or something like that. But that's something that we do as well to make sure that they sort of continually. And then we also have within the contracts and the application that applicants sign when they first sign up for the program, if there are any changes to the formula of the product, mm-hmm. They have to notify us that there is a change to the formula, and what we do is we review it. If they have a chance that the new change formula doesn't meet the requirements of the standard, then they won't be able to continue the certification. But they are required to notify us if any changes happen.
What happens if the formula doesn't change, but something is found out by somebody else about one of the chemicals in the formulation that shows it to be much worse than one first thought?
So basically, the formula is the same, but there's something that was in it that is sort of known to be hazardous later on, sort of, that came across.
Yeah.
What we have is, in each of our standards, you know, we have our specific criteria that we're looking at. We also have sort of a clause in the beginning, talks about, you know, sort of disclaimers and talks about some of the, you know, Green Seal name, that sort of thing. And what we do have to talk about unintended consequences. So this is something where, you know, we're looking at the standard, looking at the impacts of it, but there may be something that wasn't identified in the beginning that would be unidentified or unintended consequence of a certain product or service or what have you. I think we would probably take a look at it and see whether or not if it's something that, you know, is pretty harmful that wasn't identified or wasn't sort of, you know, discovered perhaps in the, you know, original certification. I think it would be something that we would take a look at and see whether or not it still maintains the intent of the standard. If something that contains a dangerous chemical later on, I would imagine that we would probably either reevaluate it or, you know, it may lose its certification if it is deemed to be, you know, pretty hazardous.
Or what if it was the, there's no new information about that product, but something else is much, much greener has now come on the market. And so in comparison, the thing that has already certification is no longer as green.
Oh, I see. Then that, what we would do is we would probably revise the standard. So we aren't necessarily revising the standard just for one technology, but if it does sort of seem that the products that are out there and that are certified, you know, are not necessarily leadership products in the marketplace, we probably go through a revision of the standard to make sure that we are addressing sort of the leadership of the marketplace at that point.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
Could I ask a question? You mentioned bronze, I think it was silver and gold. Could you just go into that a little bit more?
Sure, absolutely. So most of the standards that we have are sort of straightforward. There isn't any tier. So most of the standards that I went over, some of our cleaning product standards, some of our household standards, the household product standards, there isn't necessarily a tier or different level. What we found out is some of the service-based ones, so this is, we have a couple of ones, one's being a commercial cleaning service, so one is a lodging service. What we found is that since they're sort of comprehensive and they look at a lot of different aspects, some of them may be cost prohibitive or, you know, they have different reasons for not implementing all the aspects. You know, we sort of have tiered basically our GS33, which is our lodging standard, so there's bronze, silver, and gold. The requirements are, you know, there basically are, the way it's structured is that there are certain elements that are required for bronze, you know, more that are required for silver, and then sort of additional ones for gold. So, you know, those that come in, maybe they have sort of need to be able to come in at a sort of a lower level under the bronze certification, but the requirements are that you can come in under bronze, but you have to sort of progress to silver within a year's time frame. So we make sure that, you know, let's say that you're not there quite yet, you can apply and get bronze, but then you have to sort of be looking towards the future and implementing the remaining elements for silver. And then if you, you can stay at silver if you'd like, but there are sort of additional requirements for gold. So if you feel like you can and or want to go to sort of the leadership level of the gold level, you can move forward with that one as well. So what we do is we designate those bronze, silver, and gold on our website. But that is sort of one of the few that we have. Also our restaurant standard, which is our ANSI standard, it is tiered as well, so there's different elements. And what we found is that, you know, for some of these broad-based service ones, a tier sort of is necessary because not everyone is right there yet, I guess, is what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Do you have any data on the recognizability of your Echo label in the marketplace?
Yeah, that's a sort of a good question. We've seen... We haven't done any studies per se, but we've seen other studies done. Some of those reports that, you know, that I presented earlier were some of the reports. Those are usually in the institutional or building product marketplace. We're looking at, you know, identifying those. In the consumer marketplace, you know, I think there have been some studies as far as, you know, looking at distinguishing those that are out there. And what we sort of have found out from those studies is that's definitely an area that we sort of need to be able to focus some of our attention to make sure that, you know, if we do move into the consumer marketplace, that people are able to distinguish it and know that it's greener. What it means, you know, because we're looking at eco label, particularly ones like that are type 1, you're looking at the life cycle. So there's a lot more sort of to be looked at than necessarily something that, you know, would just be a single attribute. So, you know, we've seen some studies, I guess. We definitely know that there's sort of an area of improvement as far as, you know, education and getting the word out there about Green Seal and our water program is. So, you know, I think that's something that we're definitely going to keep an eye on and continue to do in the future.
How would you go about doing that, making the public more aware?
I think we have a lot of different sort of opportunities, perhaps. A lot of, you know, what we're doing is, you know, making sort of our, being, presenting our information or the, you know, sort of the information about the program in a more visible manner, whether or not that takes the form of, you know, conference trade shows or some consumer-based ones, you know, consumer-based, I don't know, like, you know, festivals or conferences is not something if we're looking at the sort of specifically the consumer marketplace, or if we're looking at something, you know, within an industry category, we want to make sure that, you know, whether or not it's the annual meeting that they have or whether or not something that it is a conference that sort of is as well attended, then that's something that we do to present ourselves. We also want to sort of make sure that we're leveraging our, you know, our message, you know, with, you know, I know the folks in marketing and outreach sort of have their strategies on how to get our name out there to the best of our ability as well.
Any additional questions for Christine?
And Jessica, I saw that there's a question about downloading the presentation.
Yeah.
So I can send that to you if you want to.
Okay. Post. Yes, and we will post that on the GC3 website along with perhaps the audio accompaniment to the presentation if that was recorded properly. So both those resources might be available, but the presentation definitely will be.
Hey, Jessica, this is
yeah.
Joel. This is Joel Tickner from the Lowell Center for Sustainable Production. I had to jump off for a minute, Christine, and maybe this has already been asked, so forgive my ignorance. Can you sort of think about, I mean, the context of how different eco-labeling schemes interact with each other, you know, so that, you know, in terms of the sort of the landscape. In Europe, for example, there's many, many eco-labeling schemes. There's a smaller number here in the States, but how do you see that interaction between all of them?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a great question and something we haven't sort of touched upon yet. I think as far as, you know, looking at sort of the global sort of scope of it, you know, the Global Eco-Labeling Network and some of the things that I discussed before, some of the areas that we, there are sort of annual meetings and they talk about, you know, harmonization if possible, or they also talk about looking at sort of making it facilitating because, you know, obviously, the sort of globalization going on and there's definitely, you know, a lot of products that are out there in different, even being made in different parts of the world and that sort of thing. So, you know, those are some areas where we sort of, we have a network, I guess, for sharing information as well as communicating and connecting with one another in order to touch base about, and sometimes what we do is we do to touch base about if we're developing a standard, but there's already a standard out there in Australia, perhaps, we'll touch base with them to sort of say, what are some of the elements that you looked at and what was important within your sort of, your own country. So there's sort of a network, I guess, for type 1 eco labels to sort of share information. Within that, obviously, there are other schemes or other programs that are out there which use different approaches, and that's sort of something that we try to do as well. We try to sort of communicate, you know, if we can, with some of the other eco-labeling or the other ways in which you can identify green products. You know, certainly what we do is we sort of know it's out there, but if there's communication or there's conversations that we need to have on how we can sort of work together, if at all possible, because, you know, obviously I think that, you know, at the heart of it, we sort of have the same end goal, which is promote, you know, sustainability and green chemistry out there. And how we go about it probably is a little bit different with some of the other programs, but, you know, ultimately the other things, it's the same goal that we share. So there are sort of conversations, you know, sometimes there's opportunities to share information, and then sometimes there's sort of, you know, sort of a comparison of, you know, this is one approach and this is another approach. Certain elements that, you know, come into play, you know, there's certainly, we don't cover all areas, so there's definitely other areas that, you know, can be an important consideration as well. A lot of times what we do with green sales, we get a lot of inquiries in, you know, people will say, oh, you know, I've heard, I want green seal certification on this product, and we don't have the standard for it, or we can't help them. What we do sometimes is refer them to, you know, other people to say, you know, well, maybe you should try this organization and that sort of thing. So we try to share information and share, you know, resources as much as possible and make sure that everything's addressed. But and sort of beyond that, you know, sort of we'll sort of see what makes sense, I guess.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for Christine? If no one has any further questions, we can begin to wrap things up. I think that we heard a lot about the Green Seal program and many of the specifics, and I think the further questions really got to even more of those, and I appreciate, Christine, your time and work in presenting these things to us, and I think it was very informative and very helpful. So our next GCC3 webinar, the topic and presenter are yet to be